Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
No, John Rook is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama for the Providence College, Alabama basketball game tonight. So it's Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly for the next 2 hours with you. We're going to be joined by a few other people. There's a woman from WFAN in New York whose name escapes me at the moment, but she'll be joining us in a few minutes covering the Jets, and she'll talk about the Jets-Pats game. We got our good friend and colleague Mike Reese from ESPN Boston coming in at 2:30. And then at 3 o'clock, Russell Baxter from ESPN, as he does every Thursday, going to join us via phone. And then towards the end of the show, your fantasy football friend Brian Lowe is going to, you know, sort of introduce his show by coming on at the end of ours. And look who's talking. I don't think you should be throwing stones from that glass house there, Doc.
What the open says.
Well, whatever. Anyway, in the meantime, we still have a lot to talk about. We got Pat's Jets coming up. I know there are still some of you who probably want to get off your chest what happened on Sunday night in Indianapolis. Feel free to do that. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. Webradio, all one word, at patriots.com. Give us a call at 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. Let us know what's on your mind. I got to be honest with you right now. I'm struggling a little bit. I'm lacking a little bit of energy because this. Yes. Thank you, Joe Namath, because this game Sunday night just took a lot out of me emotionally. I was not prepared for how that played out at all. About 4.5 minutes to go, walked down the hallway in the press box there at Lucas Oil Stadium, and I saw our PR guy Aaron Salkin walking around watching some of the coverage on television, and I almost said to him, boy, what a great win tonight, but something told me not to jinx it, not to say it, but I thought it. And I'm glad I didn't say it to him out loud because there were other people around and we probably would have looked foolish afterwards. But I don't know. Not that I jinxed it by thinking it or anything, but I don't know. I just still can't believe that they didn't get it done. But the good news is the season is not over. They still have a lot more football left to play. They're going to be... This Sunday, the rival New York Jets come into town. How can you not get up for that game? And at practice today, real quickly, I think the players themselves have started to get over what happened to them on Sunday night because I think they realize that they have to, A, and B, because it's not healthy to look back and to dwell on what happened because, you know, it's too late to change what happened. But what they can do is use it as a rallying point. And as we sort of talked about at the end of PFW in Progress. Out at practice today. Yeah, Doc, what's up?
Mia Harris from WFAN.
Mia Harris, FAN, at 2:15, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Out at practice today, the mood was rather jovial and lighthearted. Leading the way, as he often does, was Randy Moss, who was back on the field today after taking his what has become his customary Wednesday off for non-injury reasons, telling stories, joking around, just being demonstrative like he usually is, and I think that's helped a little bit. I think most of the players have sort of gotten over that shock of losing to Indianapolis and are focused on the Jets this week and taking care of business there because, you know, they still have to win the division, they still have to get a playoff spot, they still have. You know, I mean, anything could happen. Obviously, you know, the Colts have a pretty easy schedule for the rest of the season. But, you know, who knows? Could they go into a slump and lose three games and, you know, at the end of the season be neck and neck again with the Patriots and fighting for a bye, you know, a one seed or a two seed? Yeah, I suppose it's possible. I mean, I'm not banking on it. But it is possible, and I think that the players looking at are looking at it that way. That they it does no good to look back and dwell on the past. I think it does help. Brady said this right after the game, though. It does help to keep that loss in the back of your mind. Use it as a sort of a rallying point, something that you can point to when things get tough, or as the season goes on, when they're fighting for playoff positioning, or just even getting up for a tough game late in the season. I mean, you look at their schedule in December, and at the beginning of the season, we all thought, well, it looks like it's going to be kind of an easy schedule. You got the Jacksonville's, the Houston's, Carolina. It's, Jacksonville's playing better. Houston's is certainly still in the playoff hunt. Those are, Carolina is kind of a weird team. Some weeks they look good, some weeks they don't, but they're all still going to be tougher games than I think a lot of us expected. So there's a lot that New England has to play for, and I think they realize that, and they're starting to get over this horrendous loss. A couple of other things, though, news-wise, that you probably have already heard of, but we can talk about because they're intriguing and they involve teams in the AFC East, and that, of course, involves the Patriots tangentially. Sources, according to ESPN, say that now that the Bills have fired Dick Geron, about nine games later than they should have, in my estimation. But rumor is that they have made contact with Mike Shanahan, former Super Bowl-winning coach with the Denver Broncos, about filling that position. Whether, obviously at the end, after the season ends, right now they have defensive coordinator Perry Fuel, who's taken over the interim duties at that spot for the remainder of the season. They have quarterback issues there. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the backup, is now going to be starting. But if you're Mike Shanahan, I don't see the attractiveness of going to Buffalo. I mean, especially when there are so many bad teams out there this year, there's probably going to be at least a half dozen, probably more than that, but at least a half dozen teams that are going to have coaching turnover this offseason, and probably more attractive places. I mean, even if they make the playoffs, I think Dallas would, unless they go to the Super Bowl and win it, I think Wade Phillips is in trouble in Dallas. I don't think he's going to be there much longer. And I think that would be, I think of all of the potential coaching openings that could arise this offseason, I think Dallas would be the most attractive for Shanahan. And I think it would be in his interest to sit out and wait and see how that transpires, who's available, and make a decision then. I wouldn't take the first offer that comes along, especially with the Bills. I mean, there's really nothing. I don't know. There's just, I would say, sit and wait for that. The other news before we get to Mia Harris from FAN, Ronnie Brown, the Dolphins, hurt his foot against Tampa Bay last week, and now it's, I guess, worse than initially thought, and he's on IR, so he's done for the rest of the season. So that kind of, if they can get past the Jets this weekend, that kind of maybe eases the road a little bit for the AFC East. Not that it was ever really in doubt, I don't think, but that maybe makes it a little bit easier when they have to face these two teams, Buffalo and Miami, later on down the road. But as mentioned earlier, joining us now from WFAN in New York is Mia Harris, who covers the New York Jets. Mia, thanks for joining us today on The Playbook.
You got it, Eric. How are you?
Very good. Before we get down to the X's and O's and the on-field stuff, there's something that I really need to talk to you about, because I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I didn't hear about it. I only read about this. And explain to me the whole Rex Ryan breaking down and crying thing. What do you know about that? How did it happen? What were the circumstances? Just take us back a little bit, if you could, and give us a little background on that.
Now, granted, I wasn't there either. This was at a team meeting on Monday, apparently, and, obviously, as reporters, people have sources. So apparently one of the sources, who was, a player, it leaked out that during this team meeting on Monday, following Sunday's loss to Jacksonville, mm-hmm. Coach Ryan just kind of broke down. He got very, very extra emotional in this meeting, and he shed a tear or two. And the players saw it, and a number of the players were kind of taken back. So they said afterward, when I was out yesterday and talking to guys, and mm-hmm. Kerry Rhodes said he was kind of shocked that it happened at first. He didn't really know how to react. You know, your coach is talking to you and talking about losing this really tough game, and then all of a sudden he starts crying a bit. He didn't really know how to react at first. But then he said he kind of sat there for a second and thought, well, you know, this really isn't a terrible thing. He's emotional. He's passionate. He cares. You could really see how much he cared about what he's doing and about the team and about winning and succeeding. And he said, so it didn't really bother me that much. He's like, I was okay with it. But you have to sit and think, and I look at this, you know, having covered this team this season, this doesn't really seem like, A, a good time to be breaking down into tears, and B, I don't think as a head coach of an NFL team you kind of want to show your weakness there. Not to say that crying is a bad thing because, you know, everybody does it. It's good to release emotions, et cetera. But mm-hmm. I don't know as a – I could never imagine Bill Belichick crying in a team meeting over a loss. And I can – you know, it's almost like you're supposed to be the unflappable leader of this team, and now he's breaking down into tears – in a team meeting. Now, granted, was he sobbing and hysterically bawling, crying, that kind of thing? No. But he welled up and did get emotional, you know, and he did shed a tear or so. So, I can't think that this is a good thing because it just, number one, from an outsider's perspective, doesn't look like a good thing. Inside the locker room, this team is definitely, in recent weeks, because of the lack of success that they've had winning football games, they've gotten more quiet, they've gotten more reserved, and you can just tell this is a different team than it was the first time they played the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the right time for a, you know, emotional breakdown to be occurring at the top, which is with Coach Ryan. I just don't think it's a good situation. But
do you not think so because it's Rex Ryan and that situation? Because, there have been other situations. I mean, the most notable one, Dick Vermeil, who would cry at the drop of a hat. And it was almost kind of endearing when he did it. You remember Trent Green got hurt and Kurt Warner had to take over for him. He had that press conference where he announced it, and I remember him breaking down and crying there and saying they're going to rally around Kurt Warner and they're going to play good football. And I don't think people ever really looked at it in a negative way when Vermeil used to break down and cry. You know, another example, just after this past Sunday night when the Patriots lost to Indianapolis, there weren't any players who actually broke down and cried, but there were a lot of them, a couple of them in particular that I remember, you know, who were declining to talk to the media at first, who were on the verge of doing so. Because I think it was so emotional what they just went through. And when you start talking about things that are so emotional to you, it's almost a natural reaction to want to feel that way. Now, in Ryan's situation, it was, well, you know, a day or so later, but still, I don't know, I can almost excuse it because football is such an emotional game, and especially when you lose, it can be really tough to deal with sometimes.
Well, of course, and I think to have passion for what you do is first and foremost key. I think it's really important, and I think with Vermeil, he had a bit more of a proven track record of success, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, he had been around a while and people kind of knew what to expect from him, and it wasn't the first time that it happened. With Coach Ryan, you know, he's new at this whole head coaching thing. And,
sure.
This is his first season, and it's been rocky. They know he's emotional. They knew coming in he was emotional. There's no question. I just think the timing of this isn't necessarily the best. You know, they've lost 5 of 6. They've lost 4 games on the final possession this season, and it's just kind of been the downward spiral as of late mm-hmm. with this team, whether it's injuries, whether it's losing these games, whether it's, you know, Mark Sanchez walking to the podium with prepared notes in a very uncomfortably awkward manner, and now the whole Rex Ryan crying situation. I just feel like the string of events here mm-hmm. ending with the crying is just, the timing is really bad, I think, for this team. And you know, I don't think maybe it's not a terrible thing that he did get emotional, and we know he's passionate, but I just think that maybe wasn't the best time to do so on Monday and have it come out. But he was very self-deprecating about it yesterday when he came to the podium with a box of Kleenex.
He had the Kleenex, yeah.
He laughed it off. So maybe it won't have any ill effects. Hmm. Maybe not.
Well, you mentioned injuries, and the last time these two teams faced each other, week 2, the Jets had at nose tackle Chris Jenkins, and now he's lost for the year. How much different is New York's defense now without him in there?
Well, you lose your emotional leader on defense, which is, you know, obviously we've been talking about emotions, and this team seems to ride very high on their emotions. That's definitely hurt them. I don't think you've seen a really, you know, a more lax defense. I think the Jets' defense is still, you know, they're still third in the league overall in defense, and they've still played very well defensively this season. They have very good talent on defense. But I think when you lose that core, that center, that guy that kind of brings everybody together, it hurts the team. You know, and Sione Boha has played very well, and he, you know, he's played nose tackle before, and he's coming in a lot of packages, so it's not like he's new to a lot of run with the team, but I just think that it, you know, it's going to hurt when you lose your big guy in the middle, and you can't replace a guy like Chris Jenkins. You know, he does just too much on the football field. But I don't think the loss has been, you know, as traumatic as they thought it would be. So, you know, I don't think it's been awful.
Over on the corner, Darrell Revis looks like he's turning into a superstar at that position. In week two, he did a pretty good job, you know, shutting down Randy Moss. But after the game, Moss said, you know, any, I could be a shutdown corner if I had safety help like Revis did. And then asked about it this week, Bill Belichick kind of reiterated that Revis had some safety help. So on his conference, on Revis's conference call with New England media yesterday, that subject came up because, you know, there was a little uncertainty about, you know, the way the coverage was played. Was there a safety or not? Was Revis one-on-one with Moss or not? And I think the reporters just wanted to get some clarification or at least get Revis's side. And he seemed to be sort of bent out of shape that people were even asking the question, you know, implying that he wasn't one-on-one. What, I mean, from your vantage point, was that a case where Revis was one-on-one shutting down Moss in that game, or was he getting help from his safety?
Well, you know, I think the nature of a Rex Ryan defense is to play as an entire unit as opposed to just play as individuals. So, you know, I do think there are other guys there to support Darrell, but I do also think, and, you know, having watched, you know, some of the replays of that game from week two, he definitely did, you know, shut down Randy, and he definitely played very well. You know, but obviously a guy like Kerry Rhodes and Jim Leonard who are there to help out, that's what safeties do. You know, that's, you know, they're supposed to do that sort of stuff. And I definitely think that, you know, they helped out in some regard. But I do think Darrell Revis, obviously, and we've seen it week in, week out, he's proved himself at being one of the best corners in the league and really has played very well. And he did play outstanding in week two, you know, and he pointed that out this week when we were asking him about it, as to how he was going to approach Randy Moss, especially how well Moss played against Indianapolis this week and how dangerous he is. And he said, look in week two, he didn't really do very much against us. But I think it's an us thing. You know, Revis is not a selfish guy. He's not a guy who's going to come out and say that I stopped him. You know, he's a team guy. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, he's gonna try and take all of the credit for doing something. It's a team effort. It's everybody. I do think the Jets this week are going to struggle a bit because it's very likely Jim Leonard's not going to play. And, you know, there's a starting safety that they lose. And Eric Smith, who's will likely start for him, has played in a lot of packages. But, you know, he's not Jim Leonard. So I think that's definitely going to hurt this team. And obviously having Welker back as well, who
sure.
You guys didn't have.
Didn't have him in week two. Right.
Right, is going to be another tough thing. So I think the secondary is definitely going to be challenged. You know, Revis is going to be highly challenged this week, much more so than he was in week two. So I guess, you know what, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens this week.
Well, I think that could be right if Brady has time to throw the ball. And in week two, he got pressured a lot by New York's aggressive blitzing. Which Rex Ryan was known for and which he brought over from Baltimore. How successful has the Jets' blitz package been since week two, since the last time they faced the Patriots?
You know, they seem to get pressure on the quarterback. Unfortunately, they haven't gotten a lot of sacks, you know, at all this year. You know, they had two this past week against Jacksonville, but David Garrard seemed to have a lot of time to throw the football, and he seemed very comfortable back there. Obviously, Garrard a bit different than a Tom Brady because Garrard's a little more mobile, and he can flush outside that pocket and get stuff, you know, get passes completed while on the move, whereas Brady is more of a pocket passer. But they blitz a lot, and they rush the passer a lot early on in the season, and it seemed to fluster guys. I feel like as of late, in recent games. They haven't done it as much.
People picking up on how to stop that, you think?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. Or they're not blitzing as much because people were picking up on it and because people were pointing it out that that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they stopped doing it. And so now maybe it's time to get back to going to try and flush the quarterback out of there a bit more than they have been recently because people have been mm-hmm. picking up on it.
Now, on the other side of the ball, on offense, the last time these two teams played, the Jets didn't have Braylon Edwards at wide receiver. They traded for him in the interim. What type of dimension has he brought to this Jets offense?
It's funny. He was saying after Jacksonville on Monday that he thinks maybe he's been a bad luck charm for the team since you know he's gotten here and they've struggled.
Right.
Obviously, since he got here, but he definitely adds another layer to this offense, especially without Leon Washington because he got hurt. Leon was good at catching passes out of the backfield, so now you have an additional wide receiver who is a threat all over the field. And obviously Braylon made a big drop in the 2-point conversion against the Jaguars, and that hurt. And that's something that he's been known to do throughout his early career is that he drops some passes, and he did obviously drop a pretty much a gimme 2-point conversion that might have changed the dynamic of the game. But he's just been, he's been great. He's been honestly a really good guy to have in the locker room. He seems to lift the spirits of the team, and he just gives Mark Sanchez an additional option out there alongside of Jericho Cotchery. And it's two solid, really top-tier wide receivers, and I think it's only good for Sanchez that he has greater options to go to. It's just a matter of making good decisions on his part, and I don't think they've really worked out yet a great chemistry, but I do think that having Edwards has helped this offense and will in the future help this offense.
And, Sanchez, after three games, had four touchdowns, two interceptions. People in that area were calling him the Sanchez, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
He's now at nine touchdowns, 12 interceptions, looking more like the rookie that people, I think, expected, a starting rookie quarterback to be. Sort of 50-50 at this point, would you say so?
Oh, yeah. No, he's definitely had his moments. He's definitely struggled. But that's going to happen with rookie quarterbacks. We've seen it with all guys. I mean, Matt Ryan was very good last year, but this year now he's struggling. But it's very hard to make that transition from college to the NFL, and he's going to have good moments and he's going to have bad moments. And so far, through nine games this season, he's had both. I just think it's a matter of learning. And you can see, I've seen growth out of him. He had a problem with staring down receivers, and he's really worked mm-hmm. on that, and to try to look guys off and to just try and make smarter throws and read coverages a little bit better, which is something that he's also struggled with. And I think that's why, he's thrown the interceptions. And mm-hmm. it's just a matter of him managing this game. He doesn't have to win the game for the Jets. It's just a matter of managing the football game and not making the mistakes and not having the five interceptions like he had already once this season. If he can just not do those things to give the game away and keep the team in the game, that's where they want him right now. He's going to grow. He's going to learn. He's got the talent. It'll take time. It's growing pains. It's how it is with any rookie quarterback.
What's your gut feeling for this game Sunday, Mia? Both teams are coming off losses, pretty emotional ones on both sides. Who do you think has the edge?
I this Jets team scares me at this point in time. I think they have talent. They've played well. They just haven't found ways to win football games. And really, when it boils down to it, if you can't win a football game on a final possession, that's a sign of a team with a little bit of a lack of heart. And I know this seems like a very emotional Jets team, and it's hard to say that they have no heart, but if you're losing these games in a final possession instead of winning the game, I think there's something deep down in the core of the team. There's a reason you're not executing, and I think that's a problem with this team. And I look at it in New England, and I watch the game against the Colts, I would have gone for it. I mean, I would have punted the ball on fourth and two, but that's neither here nor there. I think New England's going to come out a little upset on Sunday, and I think a little frustrated. And number one, you always want to avenge a loss from earlier in the season, which I think is something that was in the back of their minds. And having played good football lately and should have won that game in Indianapolis, I feel like the Patriots are going to come out a little more upset and a little more determined to win the football game. And I just think they're a little bit better of a football team, especially offensively. And I'm just afraid this Jets team, the wheels might be spinning off very rapidly.
Yeah.
So I, I have this feeling that the Patriots very well might run the Jets off the football field on Sunday.
I'm having the same feeling, Mia. Mia Harris from WFAN, thanks for spending the last few minutes with us, and we'll see you Sunday up here in Foxborough.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Sounds good. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address if you want to join in, talk about the Jets game, get some last-minute things off your chest about the Colts game. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. Take a quick break. Mike Reese from ESPN Boston will join us afterwards.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
The holidays are coming. This year, give the gifts you know will be a hit from the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop has the perfect gifts for the Patriots fan in your life. Everything from sweatshirts and hats to t-shirts and jerseys. Celebrate the Patriots' 50th season with many exclusive items that you won't find anyplace else. Or pick up a gift card and let your friends and family pick out the perfect gift themselves. With more than 100 items under $10 and more than 250 items under $25, you'll be sure to get the right gift at the right price. Plus, with the purchase of $50 or more, you'll receive a $10 gift certificate. Can't make it to Foxborough? Log on to PatriotsProShop.com and take advantage of the $5 flat rate shipping on every order, regardless of size or destination. The Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open year-round, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. Stop in or log on now to get the perfect gift for the perfect price. The Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Back inside the playbook, Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly, and joining us in studio now is my good friend and colleague on the Patriots beat here, Mike Reese from ESPN Boston. What's going on, Mikey?
I just want to make sure, did I turn my microphone on?
I can hear you loud and clear.
All right.
Everybody else can too.
Good, yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me here.
I'm glad to have you, man. This is the first time we've done a radio show together.
I'm excited
good stuff.
About
we talk
it.
Football all the time, but never on the airwaves.
Now
so.
We get to have people listening to us.
I know,
talk.
Huh?
It's not just us.
Before we get to Sunday, we haven't had a chance to talk really much about Indianapolis. I still, 4 days later? I'm still at a loss at how it happened.
Well, I'm not really at a loss in terms of how it happened. I think the thing for me is processing the decision-making at the end, and I think I understand it better now. I think after the game I was shaking my head a little bit, saying, man, they just gave that game away. Didn't they? And now that I think of some of the factors and you replay it in your mind, you watch it over again, I think the decision-making makes a little more sense to me than it did after the game.
Yeah. Have you seen any of the – I know NFL Network, I think, has replayed it once already this week. I think they're doing it again now.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the plays? Have you had a chance to look at it through, you know, filtered eyes now that it's been a couple of days?
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me was that I can see, even though the time of possession was heavily skewed in the Patriots' favor, I can see where Bill Belichick was trying to protect his defense. They had lost Tully Bantakane.
Yep.
They had lost Rob Ninkovich.
Yep.
Those guys, you know, they were playing about, I want to say, I think they played 18 guys in the game, so they were down to 16. And I can see
Ty Warren was inactive.
Yeah. Those guys, I thought I could see where he would say, you know, they basically were playing the same players and mm-hmm. they were basically doing the same thing, rushing, you know, and,
yep.
And in coverage. And I thought I can see where he made the decision. I will say, in terms of my opinion, I probably still would have punted the ball. But I respect the courage to make the decision he did.
I guess the thing that still I can't fathom is this team had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter and a 13-point lead with 4.5 to go, roughly, and they let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like, Mike, I felt like I was watching the 06 AFC Championship game and Super Bowl 42 all roll into one, you know? Like, I was seeing it unfold, and I was thinking, this can't be happening again. They can't be doing this again.
And the thing that surprised me, Eric, was, you know, this team preaches situational football. And the ultimate situation. I mean, you have a 17-point lead that late. You have, you know, 4 minutes to go. You have the lead you do, excuse me. You got to close that.
Mm-hmm.
You
got
to close it out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been great closers, you know, in recent history under mm-hmm. Belichick. And in this case, it got away from him, and it got away from him very fast.
And I think one of the reasons they couldn't close was, I'm doing a story this week on red zone efficiency, or in this case, inefficiency, on both sides of the ball, Patriots offense and defense. Their offense is 25th in the league in red zone efficiency, meaning when they get the ball inside the 20, the percentage of times they actually score touchdowns. There are two separate numbers. There's the breakdown in the official NFL statistics. There's a breakdown of scoring percentage inside the 20 and then touchdown percentage inside the 20. The scoring percentage isn't bad. It's actually
87.5%. Yeah.
But you take the field goals out of that equation and it plummets to 45%.
Right.
And if they had gotten just one, they were 3 out of 6 getting touchdowns against the Colts when they went in the red zone. If they get a touchdown instead of a field goal at the end when Gostkowski hit the last one to go up 13, you're up 38.
Yeah.
I mean, you score 38. The touchdown that the Colts get at the end doesn't matter.
Right.
Because it's out of reach.
And I go back, to me, red zone, I simplify it, Eric. I say red zone, run the football. Because when the field is condensed, it's about basically powering over the opposition
mm-hmm.
or scheming over them through the running game, and I think that's where they miss Sammy Morris. I think back to that Baltimore Ravens game when
yes.
he had that terrific
yep.
12-yard run, if I recall, and Fred Taylor, who we mm-hmm. remember against the Falcons, ran right through him in the red zone. I don't think Lawrence Maroney is the guy they can count on in the red zone. Kevin Falk obviously is more of a pass catcher. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, maybe they should give him a shot down there, hand him the ball.
Fans have been clamoring for him since last year.
So, to me, spinning it forward,
mm-hmm.
let me present this to you and tell me what you think, because it was a thought I had on a chat today on ESPNBoston.com. How about Isaiah Standback and a little bit of a Wildcat-type change of pace? It can't get too much worse than we've seen results-wise, 40 trips inside the red zone, 18 touchdowns. Maybe that's one situation where I know you don't want to take Tom Brady off the field,
but you give defenses something else to prepare for that they haven't seen before with this team.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, we saw it work for the Dolphins against
mm-hmm.
the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's one area where you say, hey, let's give it a shot. Maybe Isaiah Standback can help us, because even with Tom Brady as our quarterback, we're ranking 25th. In red zone efficiency in terms of touchdown percentage.
Right. It's kind of interesting that they have two players.
Everyone sucks but me.
Standback and Edelman, who were both college quarterbacks, who are now sort of receiver/quarterback players here in the NFL. And, you know, people have, when Edelman was in training camp making that transition right off the bat, fans were running into the show back then saying, oh, he was a quarterback, why not try him out at the Wildcat, this and that. When he was drafted, I think people kind of thought that that was maybe where they were going. You know, Pat White wasn't available anymore. A couple of the other guys who were seen as Wildcat-type players, Rice, the kid from Rice, the tight end, and one other player,
James Casey.
Good memory there. None of those guys were available, so they said, well, they found this Edelman kid from K-State. Maybe he's, turned out they wanted him as a pure receiver. But I think you might be onto something. Why not try it out, you know, just to give defenses something else to think about, keep them honest. You know, we've seen the Dolphins do it. Chad Henne still remains on the field a lot of times.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean Tom Brady has to come off the field. They've done end-arounds where they've given the ball back to Henne, and he's had to throw the ball. Why not?
We know they'll go for it on 4th and 2 from their own 28.
They'll go for it anywhere.
Somewhere. There's no way that would happen.
Oh, come on, Bill.
They're not afraid to do that. Well,
I have no idea. I don't have the slightest idea.
Here's something interesting for you. We talk about this red zone stat.
Yeah.
And I do think, and I'm glad you mentioned how it's computed, somewhat flawed. If I were to tell you, or if I were to ask you, mm-hmm. who the number one ranked red zone offense is in the league,
yeah.
you have the answer?
I do, because like I said, I'm doing the story. It's Tampa Bay.
Weird.
1-8 Tampa Bay.
You know, I mean, and the reason why is they've only been in 17 times into the red zone. I think that's second fewest in the league behind Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
But they have.
So when they get there, they do well. They just don't get there that often.
And so let me ask you this. Would you rather be in Tampa Bay's spot where you were in 17 times with 12 touchdowns for a 70.6%
right.
red zone efficiency touchdown percentage, or
right.
the Patriots, who've been in 40 times, only one team has been in more than that,
mm-hmm.
New Orleans, explosive offense, but only score 18 touchdowns. I think in this case, Eric, I think I'd rather be 25th.
I kind of agree with you. I mean, I'm reminded of the quote that is very famously attributed to Benjamin Disraeli, the former British Prime Minister, who said there are three kinds of lies, damn lies, and statistics. And in this case, the statistics may look like they're troubling, but...
I do not care about the numbers.
Well, you're going to hear about them.
I do not care about the numbers.
You're right. I mean, I'd rather be in the red zone with the opportunity, even if the success rate is only about 50-50 as far as getting into the end zone. I'd rather have the chance to do it than not be there at all and be 1-8.
And let's flip it to the defense now, because that's another area we talked about with the Patriots ranking 28th defensively in the red zone. Opponents have only been in 20 times against the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
If you look down the list,
right.
Washington 19 times, the Jets 20,
mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh 20. Going further down the list, Dallas 19, Houston 18.
Yep.
So the Patriots have allowed, you know, they're in the top 10 in terms of fewest trips into the red zone allowed.
However.
But when the teams get there.
They tend to score.
13 touchdowns
right.
and 20 trips. So again, it's like, you know, let's go up to.
More than 8 times out of 10, if
right.
a team gets in the red zone against New England, they're going to get
right.
a touchdown.
Right. So here's a question, just another comparison. Let's take Detroit's red zone defense, just to pick a team.
Okay.
I knew Detroit. I knew I could count on Detroit. You can always count on Detroit.
For something.
You know? Yes.
Not always something good, but you can count
argument,
on something.
Right. You know? They rank 11th in red zone defense,
yeah.
which I think a lot of people would like for
mm-hmm.
the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Opponents have been in the red zone 40 times against them. That's an NFL high, if I'm not mistaken. And they have scored 19 touchdowns for a 47.5 touchdown percentage. So I ask you this, Eric. Would you rather be the Patriots, ranked 28th in the NFL,
right.
red zone defense,
right.
20 possessions,
mm-hmm.
13 touchdowns allowed, or Detroit, 40 red zone possessions, double the number,
yeah.
19 touchdowns? I mean, that's why the statistics...
Yeah, I think that's why we have to analyze the statistics.
Yeah.
You can't just take one and look at it and just take it at face value. You have to do a little research. You have to put it in context. And, you know, I think they're noteworthy, but because if you ask any player in the locker room, as I've been doing this week for the story, they're concerned about those numbers. Regardless of how many trips it's been, they don't want to give up points at all. Anytime, whether it's in the red zone or outside the red zone. Equally interesting stat there, not just red zone, but goal to goal opportunities, the Patriots are 28th.
Interesting.
So when they get in the red zone, they're scoring 8 out of 10 times. When they get inside, when they get halfway to the end zone from there, they still get it in more often than not. Kind of troubling.
I like this team, Eric. I like them. And I think just sort of going, like, looking at the big picture here, I thought the loss was devastating. I thought it was heartbreaking. I thought that they win that game, it's a springboard to possibly running the table the rest of the season and being the number one seed in the AFC. So I think it's
mathematically, that certainly would have been in play.
I think it was heartbreaking, devastating, all that. Step back from it, put the emotions aside, look at 58 minutes or 56 minutes of some high-quality football, which they sure did play. And I know you can't do it. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about what's
game.
In the W column and the L column.
Yep.
But the reason I can spin it forward and put a little bit of a happy face on it is I don't see the Jets closing in on them two games back.
I don't either.
I don't see the Dolphins closing in on them.
Especially not now.
Ronnie Brown. No. I don't see the Bills closing in on them.
The wheels came off that a long time ago.
So I think they're still in a good position, and I think as the sting goes away from the performance, because it was a sting.
Oh,
there was
nothing
like that locker room outside of Super Bowl 42 that I've ever seen.
I agree.
I think they can sort of say, hey, you know what? We're a pretty good team. Can't forget what Tom Brady said before the game. When you play the Colts, you get a feel for where you measure up.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The Patriots measure up pretty good. Not as good as the Colts. You can't say they're as good as the Colts.
Right.
They didn't win the game.
Right.
But pretty good, Eric. Right there.
You're right. And good teams, Super Bowl teams, don't allow themselves to go on the road, get a lead against a good team, and then lose it. And we've seen them do that twice this year. They did it at Denver when Denver was undefeated and seen as one of the elite teams, and they just did it this past weekend. That is the only thing that causes me a little bit of concern as far as long-term chances for this team when it comes to the playoffs and the Super Bowl.
How does that change? Let's think about this. You're the Patriots. It's week 10 or week 11 because you have the bye week in there. And pretty much at this point, most teams' identities are pretty well established.
Yep.
I mean, pick a team, you know, the Jets, just to say a team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We know what they are. They're a power running team. They lead the league in rushing yards, and they're going to blitz you defensively. What are the Patriots? And I think they're an explosive offense, but to be able to close out games, I still think they need to have that ability to pound it. And the one game that I really felt they did it, that they really pounded it, was against the Falcons.
Yeah.
And the one person that comes to mind when I think about that game is Fred Taylor.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about it. If the Patriots are to turn this thing around,
they need the running game.
Fred Taylor running game. It's not going to happen.
Specifically.
It's not going to happen with Lawrence Maroney. He's had his chance. And look, I've been one of his biggest defenders. I think he can still be on the roster and you can still win with him. But I think Fred Taylor needs to be your hammer if you're going to be able to close out games with a little help from Sammy Morris. So I do. So here's, I guess, my thought. And maybe this goes back to me being a little bit of an optimist. I'm in the wrong profession. I'm supposed to be, you know, the curmudgeon here. You know, aren't I a reporter? What's going on here? I think they have the parts on the roster to be able to close it out, to be the Papelbon, for lack of a better analogy.
Sure, that's
analogy.
Good analogy. Yeah, it's good analogy.
And it's Fred Taylor, and it's Sammy Morris, and it also has to come from the play calling. I was disappointed, just going back to the Colts game, when I heard Bill Belichick mention after the fact that they had pretty much decided to go for
on
it
third on, down.
On third down, that they didn't run the ball on third down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was disappointed because, one, I think that's the wrong situational play if Belichick's
telling
the truth.
It's incomplete, the clock stops, whereas if you run it and you don't get any yards, the clock continues to run or Indy has to burn a timeout.
The final timeout.
Right.
Right? And I was disappointed in that, and it also reflected to me a team that is a passing team, you know? And if you want to close out games, I am a believer in getting the hard yards.
I agree. And it's interesting you point out that Belichick said they decided basically on third down. Apparently they didn't tell the quarterback, because the offense was coming off the field on fourth down. The punt team was going on the field. There was a little miscommunication there. So they may have decided that, but it didn't seem like, and Bill admitted this too, that the communication could have been a lot better in those final minutes there, because I think that had a lot to do with it. I mean, my first thought when I saw it was, I saw Chris Hansen and maybe a couple of other guys, Jake Ingram maybe, running onto the field. I'm thinking, okay, they're going to punt. I kind of had given up hope that they were going to have any chance to win the game at that point, even though they still had the six-point lead. I see Brady then come back on the field, and my first thought is kind of, I do have hope now. Maybe, you know, I mean, I know it's kind of weird that they're going for it on their own 28, but I kind of have a little more faith that maybe they can get this first down because the Colts defense wasn't stopping them. They could do what they wanted against that team, the exception of Robert Mathis getting by Nick Kazier a little bit more often than he probably should have and getting in Brady's face. I thought that they could have done whatever they wanted against that defense. Yep. And I started thinking, oh, maybe they're giving the Colts something to think about, but then they didn't have the timeout left to burn. So then you're thinking, well, they really are going to go for it. Is Brady going to quick kick it? What's going, you know, all this stuff I'm sure that we're thinking of as it's happening, but Bill and his coaches were thinking of even before then. But it didn't seem like they communicated all that well enough, because I think if you're crisper in that situation, maybe you force the Colts to take a timeout when they see that you're not bringing your punt team on right away and that you're automatically lining up. Then you get a timeout. Then you can maybe discuss what you want to do. Maybe take a deep breath and say, do we really want to go for it? Should we, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
the whole dynamics changed at that point.
I think that's the part that probably had Belichick up at night. I don't think it was the fourth down call. I think he felt confident that that was the right decision. It was botching the situational aspects of it.
Something they pride themselves on, like you said.
It's a trademark of who they are. So I think those are good points. And you know, part of the reason taking that time out before fourth down was so was partially devastating was it allowed the Colts to see what personnel the Patriots had on the field, and they could match up their personnel accordingly. If you do it, you know, if you run it right away and you don't substitute, well, now you might have the matchup, you know, that you want against them. So
right.
I think, you know, Jim Caldwell, the Colts coach, had mentioned that after the game. That really helped us being able to have the stoppage in action to be able to match up specific to what they saw. So, wow, isn't this amazing? I mean, it's Thursday afternoon, and we got the Jets coming in, and we're still talking about the Colts. And they were in the locker room today. Strong comments from Gerard Mayo.
Very strong. Yeah, you were in there, too. You know, he was asked specifically about Teddy Bruschi's comments post-game, post-mortem analysis, which was kind of harsh. And Mayo essentially said, yeah, thanks, Teddy, but you're not part of this team anymore. You don't know what's going on anymore. Yeah, it's only been 2 months, but there's a different dynamic in here now, and you're not privy to what it is. I thought that was pretty strong. Right.
It was very strong. And I have to go back and read Teddy's original piece, which I thought was very, very well done. And
colleague of yours now.
And he spoke from the heart, and I respect it, and I know that he doesn't regret it. I mean,
Teddy Bruschi, Arizona.
He said he would have said the same thing to Belichick. So he had, you know, that's the way he feels, and I thought it was great. I think if I recall, what he said was his feeling would have been, you know, his blood would have boiled, and then now that I think of it, he did say, you know, that does send a bad message to the defense. And I think so. I think at first it was, this is how I would have taken it, but then he sort of rounded it out and said, you know, it sends a bad message. Which Mayo stepped up today, and I thought that was those were some strong comments.
I do. Obviously, it's not going to do this team any good to continue to harp on it. I think keeping it in the back of their minds and using it as a springboard is probably the way to go. And you and I were both out there at practice today. I thought the mood was especially lighthearted, jovial, almost not like they had forgotten what happened, but I think I could sense that they had moved on. They were ready to move on with it. Did you get that impression?
I did, and I think the other impression that I got this week was the power of number 12. And this has struck me all year, to be honest with you. I think the Tom Brady leadership aspect can't be overlooked here. I mean, we've often said Brady as the quarterback, he sets the tone, and I think he's really stepped up, not just on the field, but off the field. I mean, 15 minutes answering questions at his locker on Wednesday and really, you know, saying things that I think he knew players would hear, whether it was through him or through other. I think Brady has really embrace the idea that with Teddy Bruschi, Mike Vrabel, Richard Seymour, Rodney Harrison no longer on this team, that it fell to him to do more than he had been doing. And I think the fact he's been at every practice, and that's not an accident. You know, I think to me,
especially in training camp, when in the past he would take a day off or a practice off to rest the shoulder or the elbow, or whatever.
To me,
you're right. He's been there.
Yeah, to me, that's a big part of this. I think Brady sets a tone when a Pat Chung or a Darius Butler or a Sebastian Vollmer looks over and says, "Oh, so this is the way a three-time Super Bowl winning quarterback who is one of the best to ever play the game handles the most difficult loss I've ever had in my NFL career, meeting a rookie."
The young kids, right.
I guess this is what it means to be a professional. You're not just hearing it, you're also seeing it. I think the power of Brady has been pretty evident to me this week.
I agree with you, and especially in the immediate aftermath of the game, at his post-game press conference, he was as composed, given how emotional that was, and you saw the locker room. It was an emotional locker room. Not a lot of guys talked, but the guys who did, you could see the emotion welling up inside a lot of these guys. I mean, there were people on the verge. There were people on the verge. A lot of them didn't talk because I think they knew that if they had talked, they might have said something they would regret. And I was completely amazed at how well Brady kept his composure and actually didn't seem to be... he didn't at least show that he was overly devastated to the point where he couldn't talk about it.
I was almost tearing up on the sidelines.
Were you? I think you're almost tearing up now.
I was. I'm still a little emotional about
it. All right.
Is that because I'm about to leave?
That's true.
Yes.
I'm going to start crying now, too.
Yeah.
But seriously, his postgame, I thought, was one of his best ones ever. Given everything that was going on at that point.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. I've been fascinated by it really since focusing in on the knee injury and how this whole season would go for him. And I think you nailed it. I think right on the money.
Mikey, good to have you in studio, man.
It's great. We just knocked out a half hour of nonstop Patriots.
See,
talk.
This is why you could host this show.
This is what we do in the locker room.
It's great.
And almost for half an hour sometimes because there's so few players that tend to talk to us anymore. But it's good to have you on the
air. You know what I'd like to do, Eric?
What's that?
Next time John can't be here, I'd love to get Mike and Bruschi for a two-hour show. That would be must-listen radio.
I wouldn't mind hearing that.
You'd probably get me. Good luck getting Teddy.
Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com. Thanks, man, for joining us for this half hour.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll see you tomorrow in the locker room and on Sunday for the Jets. Well, real quick before we let you go, your feeling, though, about this game Sunday?
Yeah. I think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be a blowout like some people say. I've heard people say, the Jets are walking into a hornet's nest.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jets are a tough matchup for the Patriots, and the reason being they run the ball, and the Patriots are a little banged up on the defensive line. I mean, if they had Richard Seymour and Jarvis Green healthy and we knew Ty Warren was going to go, I'd probably feel better about the game.
Yep.
So I think a low-scoring game, 20-10, Patriots over the Jets, I feel comfortable going in that direction.
Very good. I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
thanks, Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com. Again, we'll talk to you soon, buddy. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address if you want to join in. Give us your thoughts about this Sunday's game, 508-543-7482. The phone number, quick break. Russell Baxter from ESPN, up next.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, That's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto-reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Good stuff, Jason. Back inside the playbook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, substituting for the working John Rook. Not vacationing,
Liar.
Really, but he's down in Tuscaloosa for the PC Providence College Alabama basketball game. So once again, he flies south, and we're stuck up here, and as we do each Thursday at 3 o'clock,
Baxter.
Our good friend Russell Baxter from ESPN, Mr. Football. Welcome back to the playbook, Russell. How's things?
Things are good, Eric. How are you doing? Are you feeling a lot like Joan Rivers these days?
Why is that?
Well, you remember like the latter years of the Today Show when Johnny Carson was never around?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
It was always Joan Rivers filling in.
Yeah, I'd like to think my face is a little less plastic.
I don't think I've talked to John on this this show since the Super Bowl.
Really?
The Patriots were in.
Yeah, the Super Bowl 42.
Yeah, Super Bowl 42.
Yeah, I know.
Definitely seems that way, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you can't hear him. Might as well throw him under the bus. What the heck?
Yeah.
We all do.
Yes.
So, Russell, before we get to this weekend's games, got to get your thoughts about the debacle in Indy on Sunday night.
Why? Did something happen in the Colts-Patriots game last week?
What was your initial reaction and your reaction now that we have 4 days to have thought about?
Well, I think at first I thought that Tom Brady was going to try to draw them offside. That was my initial thought. Then when they ran the play, I was certainly surprised. But, you know, the thing I never understood, and let's do a little math here first off. Coaching wins for me, none. Super Bowl wins for
Same
me,
here.
None.
Same here.
Okay, we all have that equal record.
Right.
I was just surprised Coach Belichick did not play it out in punting the ball, letting Peyton come down the field. Even if Peyton came down the field with 2 minutes and change, first off, you're assuming he's going to score. But even if you assume that he scores a touchdown, depending on how much time would be left on the clock, and who's to say there wouldn't be significant time left on the clock? Remember, the Colts
can score pretty quickly, yeah.
Well, they were not running the ball.
They were going to throw the ball
through the air. So in their own way, they were preserving clock for the Patriots.
Right.
To me, I never understood why nobody thought the Patriots could win 37-35.
Yeah.
Okay, get the ball back.
I'm going to go out on the
Peyton Manning is pretty good in 2 minutes. The other guy's pretty good, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though the pass wasn't complete, I'll never forget at the end of that Super Bowl, throwing that ball 70 yards in the air and putting it right in Randy Moss's hands.
Boy, if it hits your hands, if it hits your hands, it's catchable. You know,
yes,
the rule.
I mean, it was also knocked out.
It was right on target. Could have easily been a completion.
Yeah. Right, and I mean, the Colts are, I'm sure, still trying to figure out how to cover Randy Moss from that game the other night.
Mm.
And I'm not saying he would have been the guy, but all you need, and you got a pretty long-range kicker in Gostkowski. I was just surprised that, say New England gets the ball back with, I'll even say 30 seconds, okay? And let's also keep in mind that maybe not using the timeouts like they had, which that's a factor in it as well.
Sure.
I think to me, and Colts do not have great special teams. They gave up the long Welker return the other night. That scenario never seemed to present itself. Now, I will also say this. I think the Patriots also had their chance to put their foot on the Colts' throat in the third quarter. And those two turnovers, which seemingly gotten forgotten.
Right.
The Maroney one at the two.
Mm-hmm. And the Brady interception.
And the Brady pick. And right. I'm just going to say this. Let's say they don't score a touchdown, Eric. Let's say they get two field goals.
Mm-hmm.
That's six more points.
Right.
And that changes the complexion as well. To me, listen, it was a great game. And unfortunately, it's being, you know, just overwhelmed by this one decision and so on. But I'll say then, I've said this to a couple people this week. You know, when you coach in as many big games as Bill Belichick has, and you're involved in as many big games, you know, do you remember a couple, I know, being from up in that area, obviously, you're well aware when the Yankees blew the 0-3 lead.
Oh, sure.
And, of course, the Red Sox came back.
Sure.
You know, and when that happened to the Yankees, you know what honestly came in my mind? If you're in enough of these things,
it's going to turn about as fair play. Everything's going to happen to you.
You're going
to
win 4-0. You're going to come back when you And that's how I feel about Bill Belichick and the Patriots. If you're in enough of these things, eventually you're going to see everything.
You're
going to
get yours. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And I firmly believe when he said, you know, we move on, because he moves on every time, and so on. But that's the thing that struck me. I was just surprised, and who knows how much faith he had in his defense. Listen, I didn't think Peyton Manning played all that well Sunday night.
I didn't think he did either.
You know, a couple blown coverages. He threw threw a really ugly pick. The Colts certainly had their share of three and outs and so on. But I'll also say this. Bill Belichick has seen Peyton Manning on more than one occasion, the championship game, obviously, when they, you know, the Patriots are up by 18 and lost the game.
Yeah.
You know, people always remember, Eric, the goal line stand game in 03 at the RCA Dome, in which the Patriots won 38-34.
Right.
I know Bill Belichick certainly remembers that the Patriots were up 31-10 when the Colts came back and scored three straight touchdowns and tied it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in an interesting kind of twist of fate and so on, you know, Bill Belichick was on Bill Parcells' staff in 1998 when Peyton was a rookie, and they used to play the Colts twice because they were in the same division.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The third week of the season, the Jets played the Colts and Peyton Manning, and the score is 44-6, Jets. Later that year, the Jets went on an amazing run. They started 2-3. They won 10 of their last 11 games in the regular season. Remember, that's the year they almost got to the Super Bowl.
Right, and then they lost to Denver in the title game.
They beat Jacksonville and lost to Denver. Right. We called Jacksonville the Keyshawn Johnson game because he did everything in that game. But they won 10 of their last 11 regular season games. The only game they lost that year was at Indianapolis down the stretch to young rookie Peyton Manning, in which they blew a 13-point lead, and Peyton drove them down and scored with less than a minute and beat them 24-23. So it's safe to say Bill Belichick, in every stretch of his imagination, has seen Peyton Manning come back from the depths, you know, at least double-digit times. Right off the top of my head, there's four times.
Right.
Okay, three of them resulted in wins. And, of course, the one, you know, the Patriots with the great goal line stand and so on. But I will also say this, to put a capper on it. What a tremendous rivalry this has turned into.
Oh,
this
God,
decade.
It certainly is. It's the rivalry of the
to
decade.
Talk about, and let's hope for the sake of the NFL, we got one more left somewhere in some round of the playoff.
Yeah, and it's going to be back at Lucas Oil Stadium most likely, because I don't see the Colts losing at least three more games and having the same record as New England at the end of the year.
Well, the thing is that, you know, for all the teams in the AFC, the Pittsburghs, the Denvers, the San Diegos, the New Englands, they're all 6-3.
Mm-hmm.
Not just chasing the Colts right now.
Right.
You're also chasing the Cincinnati Bengals, who I think made their own statement last week as well.
That's right. Don't sleep on the Bengals.
No.
Don't sleep on the Bengals. They played a great game.
Well, Houday is the second best team record-wise in the AFC right now.
They are. And they're playing great defense, as they showed in Pittsburgh. And I don't think they're playing their best offense, but they're playing well enough on offense. And with
they're playing a different kind of offense that we're used to seeing. I mean, when they won the division in 2005, they were incredibly balanced with Rudy Johnson, the receiving tandem of you know, it was Chad Johnson back there, so that's how I'm going to call him, and T.J. Houshmandzadeh, and spread the ball around with the tight end, and Carson Palmer. In 05, they were one of the teams that gave up the least, you know, they were like in the top half of the league. I'm sorry, like in the top five of the league in terms of sacks allowed and turnovers. They're highly efficient offense and the balance. And they're getting that balance again with Cedric Benson being in the backfield. You know, he's got the hip flexor now, and we'll see. I mean, how lucky are the Raiders? They face the Bengals this week. They're struggling themselves, and they got a very, very good chance of seeing a guy who has killed them over the years in Larry Johnson in the years he was with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'd feel really bad for the Oakland Raiders this week. That's all I have to say. I especially after that performance in Pittsburgh, I think Cincinnati has, like you said, they've proven that they are an elite team this year in this conference. And Oakland is at the complete other end of the spectrum and not playing for anything this year except their paychecks, but which are substantial. Don't get me wrong. I'll trade paychecks with them any day. But
let's hope whoever's doing the math for their checks is not the same person that's coordinating their offense.
I would hope not. Back here in the AFC East, because that's how New England is going to make the playoffs probably at this point, is by first winning their division and getting at least that much. A couple of teams made some news this week. The Dolphins have lost Ronnie Brown for the season, injured his foot against Tampa Bay last week, and I guess went to go get it checked out, and it was worse than I guess everybody down there had thought, and they had to put him on IR. Meanwhile, the Bills, whose wheels came off a long time ago, I thought, finally put an end to the Dick Geron era, and now the defensive coordinator, Perry Fuel, has taken over in the interim. There are rumors now that they're seeking talks with Mike Shanahan and trying to gauge his interest and maybe going there. And then the Jets come to town this weekend to face New England. So the never-boring AFC East, Russell, still making news for these teams who are struggling right now, and it looks like these things are possibly helping New England secure this the AFC East.
Well, we're going to find out everything we need to know about this division, I think, in the next couple of weeks. I mean, there's no question about it. Obviously, with this game coming up, with the Jets, then the next 2 weeks at New Orleans on a Monday night, which is looks like a fabulous matchup, and then at Miami, and you know, with a game at Buffalo left, I understand that, and so
that's
on.
Right.
But could really kind of put a stranglehold on things if they can manage to win these three games. You know, remember these teams that are chasing them are already two games behind. So, and the thing that's the thing that's keeping the Jets afloat, Eric, is the fact that they did beat New England back in week two. That's the thing you kind of look at. I mean, for a while there, Miami was kind of the one secure fact they had, is even though they had gotten off to a horrendous start, they were undefeated in the division.
Right.
After sweeping the Jets and beating Buffalo, of course, they lost to New England, so they kind of lost that little edge and so on. So, yeah, I mean, listen, one team loses its coach, one team loses its, you know, arguably the most important part of its offense because of the style offense they play,
right,
in that Wildcat offense. And here come the Jets, who have just, well, they just keep on finding creative ways to lose. I mean, a couple weeks ago, they gave up 104 total yards and then turned around and gave up two kickoff returns for 100-plus in one quarter.
God, what a game
that
was.
I mean, it's, you know, I didn't know Forrest Gump played at the Meadowlands, but there he was. And then, of course, this past week, you know, it's funny, the Jets' defense, Eric, could not stop the Jaguars when they had to. And even when the Jets' defense wanted Jacksonville to score.
Right. Jacksonville didn't.
They screwed that
up,
too.
Didn't want to score. Right.
Okay.
Well, yeah,
so, although, and I will say this, because you haven't asked me about it yet, but I'll volunteer.
Okay.
I know other people said that was a smart football move. I'm sorry. I thought that was a dumb football move.
You were losing the game. Right. Get the points.
Yes. Get the points and figure it out later.
Right.
And so
I totally
on.
Agree. When I saw the play, because I believe we were still in our hotel in Indy at that point, and we were watching the we had the Cincinnati Pittsburgh game, which was a great game, and they kept going back to New York for the updates, and they showed the play, and I saw Maurice Jones-Drew go down, and there was nobody near him.
Mm-hmm.
He had a clear shot to the end zone, and he fell down at the one, and I knew he did it on purpose, but I'm thinking, right. What are you doing?
Right.
I mean, you could have a fumbled snap, a muffed, you know, a hold on the field goal. Goal line stand. It could get blocked
right.
And run back the other way. Score the points.
Right.
I'm totally with you. With you there.
Of course, people were comparing it to the Brian Westbrook play from a couple of years in Dallas, but Philadelphia was winning that game.
Right.
That's different. And listen, you can do all kind of, well, that's how we play and blah, blah, blah. Well, most people I know don't play like that.
No.
Okay.
You play to score points.
Most people I know,
right.
You know, they cross the end zone and run. Okay. So, I mean, you know, with all due respect to all the 10,000 fantasy football owners that lost, I mean, too bad.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about reality football here. And the reality is that when you have the chance to score and you're losing,
you score the points.
You score the point. Now, I know people say, well, what about Brandon Stokley early in the season? Brandon Stokley at any one time could step into the end zone. He did what I thought was a smart football play.
He did.
Okay, because he never gave himself up.
No.
As soon as anyone got within, you know, yards of him, he stepped into the end zone and scored.
Yeah. In fact, I think he jumped in a little bit early.
Right. This was a conscious effort not to score.
Right.
And I just didn't understand it.
I didn't either. They're lucky they got away with that.
Well, I mean, what happens if you don't? I mean, what happens if you – and remember, it's not on Maurice Jones-Drew. It's on the coaching staff.
Oh, right, because they told him to do it. It's not like he did that on his own volition.
Yeah, I mean, people watch too much TV, I think. That must be the problem. So.
It might be. We might certainly fall into that category, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I agree with you on both of those points. Before we get a little bit further into the Jets-Patriots, the Colts are at Baltimore this week. Tough matchup, obviously, but do you think it's possible, 2 years removed from New England's 16-0 season, that we could see yet another 16-0 team, possibly even two 16-0 teams?
Yeah, two 16-0 teams. How amazing that would be. Is it possible? Sure. I mean, you know, let's not forget the Colts have actually won 18 regular season games in a row now, which ties the Patriots' one streak. That's
right.
The nice thing about the Patriots, they have two of these streaks,
they
an
do.
18 and a 21.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Is it possible? Sure. But, I mean, closing out the deal is the important thing. It's running the table completely. That's the most important thing. And listen, Peyton Manning really had his way with the Baltimore Ravens going back, you know, six or seven years. The last two games, as a matter of fact, he's played them. He's thrown for 520 yards and 7 touchdowns without an interception.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe put 75 points on the board. Oh, and one of those games was in Baltimore where they scored 44 points.
Wow.
And beat them last year 31-3. So hasn't been all that intimidated by the Ravens, who, by the way, are going to be without Terrell Suggs. After Brady Quinn gave him an early Thanksgiving Day
that's
present
right,
on Monday
yeah.
night.
He got fined $10,000 for that hit.
Yeah, listen, the Browns are doing their best to earn their money. I don't think they can afford to let any of it go.
Yeah.
But in any case, could you walk into Listen, the Ravens were in the playoffs last year. It's not a bad football team.
Mm-hmm.
And they can run the ball with Ray Rice. So, I mean, I would not be shocked if they knock the Colts off, because I don't think the Colts have played all that good of football the last three games, and all home games. You know, the Colts, for being 9-0, it's interesting, they're 9-0. Five of their 9 games this year decided by 4 points or less.
Yeah.
And if you go back to their last three home games, they beat the Niners by 4.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the Texans by 3 on a missed field goal at the end.
Yep.
And then, of course, they beat the Ravens on 4th-and-2. Sorry, but I had to say it. So
the Patriots
at 4th-and, you know, so.
And they've had to come from behind in each of those games to
right.
win.
8 points. Listen, and there's a lot to be said for that as well. But this is not a dominating football team as of yet. Even the Saints themselves right now on their journey.
At Tampa this week.
Right. Dominant a little earlier in the season. Now you're seeing them cracks in their run defense. And eventually somebody's going to run the ball on them for 250 yards and not turn it over. That's been the big difference with the Saints this year. Mm. They're getting the takeaways they didn't get last year, that opportunistic deal. In fact, their defensive unit has scored 7 touchdowns, 8 return touchdowns if you count the kickoff return last week by Courtney Roby. So they're getting scoring from other places other than Drew Brees, and that's a big difference. Same thing with the Colts. Colts have multiple takeaway games, 7 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So they're forcing multiple turnovers just about every time they're playing. And then, again, they're not a great run defense as well. They could run into a heavy dose of Ray Rice this week.
That's true. And he's become a
well, he's
really
become
good
their
back.
Premier
he's
back. He's one of the NFL leaders in yards from scrimmage. Great pass catcher out of the backfield as well, and so on. A lot to be said for Hart, not necessarily prototypical size.
Right. Before we let you go, thoughts on this Sunday, Jets at Patriots, 4:15
well,
game.
Ask you this. I'll ask you this, Eric. Is there really such thing as a cover corner? Or a shutdown corner? Because that seems to be the thing I'm going to be hearing all week on this one.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a war of words going on about that between Darrell Revis and Randy Moss and Bill Belichick, who say that he had safety help with Kerry Rhodes and that first matchup. And Darrell Revis was just upset that people even brought the question up in a press conference yesterday, in a conference call.
Well,
I thought it was a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question, but I'll tell you what strikes me about that first matchup that people forget. Randy Moss played in there and obviously did not put up big numbers against, I'm going to say, the Jets secondary, Darrell, however you want to throw it at, okay?
Sure.
Somebody else did not play in that game, and that was Wes Welker.
Correct.
And I thought that threw a lot of it to, obviously, you know, Randy Edelman, the rookie, was forced into the Welker role. When Wes Welker's in there, Randy Moss is a different beast, and I'll be really interested to see how the Jets handle Welker and Moss rather than Edelman and Moss.
Yeah, good point.
Nice little player.
Different story.
Good point. No, it's absolutely. Edelman had his catches in that game.
Absolutely.
He had 8 for 98, but it's not the same. You know, you don't focus on the guy. Maybe he had those many because they weren't focusing on him.
Exactly.
They have to focus on Welker. That means
that little delay
that
over the middle that Wes Welker runs is almost, you can almost play action off of that.
Yeah.
That's how reliable it is.
Yeah, you're right. So, the Jets are reeling a little bit after a hot start with their young rookie quarterback. Patriots, both teams have emotional losses that they're coming off of. It's an important game. The Jets are one up, as we said, after winning in Week 2 against New England. How do you see this game playing out?
Well, I think the Jets, for all their bravado at times, and especially talk of their defense, have not played good defense for about a month. And I know Mark Sanchez's turnovers have had contributing factor to that, but they're not doing a great job of stopping the run. And they were not doing a great job of stopping the run even before Chris Jenkins got hurt, and now he's out. And that leaves them very, very vulnerable up the middle and so on. And maybe it's not Moss and Welker. Maybe Darrell Revis is going to have to spend a lot of time on the line stopping Lawrence Maroney and whoever Bill Belichick decides is the focal point of their ground attack. I think this is going to be a workmanlike effort by the Patriots. And listen, the Jets, and I know it was Matt Castle last year, Jets have won 2 of the last 3 times in Foxborough.
Yeah.
I mean, that hasn't been lost on
that. That's right. No, you're right.
But on the other hand, I just think if you take all – and listen, the Patriots' defense is still very young and has its share of young guys and a lot of new faces from years past. But the Jets' defense, to me, has definitely deteriorated a little since the fast start. And I think that's going to be the telling factor in a Patriots win.
Well, I agree. I think Patriots win. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout.
No, I don't feel that way.
I think they'll win
like a
pretty well.
17-9, 17-6, 20-10 type of game.
Yeah, and that seems to be how it normally is with the Jets and the Patriots. It's not really high scoring on either end, usually.
Right. Last year we had the big shootout in Foxborough.
Right, that was a rarity.
Between Favre and Castle.
Right.
We don't have Favre and Castle right now.
Right.
Right now we have a rookie and we have the seasoned veteran in Tom Brady.
Right.
And I think this is going to be more about the lines and less about the quarterbacks this time around.
Okay. Russell Baxter, as always, good stuff. And we'll talk to you, either I or John Rook. It would be amazing if John Rook shows up for a Thursday show next
week. I'm just going to start calling him John Carson instead of John Rook. So.
Just as long as you don't call me Eric Rivers, because I don't think I have the plastic face that she does.
Oh, okay.
I hope not.
Anyway. A lot of work. but she's the Celebrity Apprentice, I'm actually a big Joan Rivers fan.
That's
so
true.
On.
That's
true. People forget. I mean, she was. It still is a very funny lady, but people forget that's really how she made her bones was filling in for Johnny Carson all those years.
Yeah.
You know. That was a long. I know it's a long time ago.
I do remember. I was a young kid. I was a young kid at that point, but I do remember.
I was
when
a big
Carson,
Johnny Carson fan, to be honest with you.
I did
too.
Fan.
I thought he was one of the wittiest guys to ever be on TV. So
our producer is shaking his head. He doesn't even know who Johnny Carson is. He's the kid just
years before my time.
Yeah. Oh, please.
Well, George Washington was before your time. You know who he is, don't you?
When was Johnny Carson's last year?
I want to say 1992.
I was six.
Oh, God. All right, Russell. Well, thanks again. Good stuff as always.
Don't call me ever again.
Hopefully we'll talk to you next Thursday.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Take care, Eric. Enjoy the game this weekend.
You too. A lot of good ones on tap. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482, the phone number. Get your Kleenex ready. We're going to have Rex Ryan coming up after this and your phone calls and emails.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Football is an emotional game, as we found out. Well, if you've ever played football, you know how emotional a game it can be. If you're a football fan, you know how emotional it can be because you live and die with your teams. And sometimes emotions get the better of us. And the other day, after their loss to the Jaguars, Jets head coach Rex Ryan, his emotions got the better of him, and he choked up, broke down a little bit in front of his team in a post-game, I guess it was the day after, team meeting, and showed a little bit of his more human side, I guess, in front of his players. Some people say that that was not a good thing, that it was, you know, it didn't display the kind of leadership that a head coach should display, especially for a team that's reeling and having the kind of problems that the Jets are having. Some people think it was just a normal, natural thing to do after a tough and emotional loss. I mean, look, Dick Vermeil used to cry all the time for lesser things, and he was sort of that was sort of an endearing quality that he had that most people thought. But Rex Ryan is also a guy who likes to poke fun at others and even himself. And at his press conference with the media and on his conference call, he joked about his little tearful incident and even brought a Kleenex box out with him to his press conference. Then he had his conference call with the New England media, and here's how that played out yesterday.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how is everybody?
Good. How you doing, Rex?
Oh, I've been okay, surviving.
Good.
Might you have a Kleenex box nearby?
That's what I did. I did a press conference, and I brought it out, and they said I got a new sponsor. You know, it's funny the way, you know, things get out and stuff like that. But, again, hey, I'm man enough to, you know, I'm myself. And if I'm not a typical coach or whatever, then so be it. I know one thing. I'm myself, and there's no bigger competitor than I am.
Rex, was that just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing? Did it catch even you by surprise when the tears started to roll, or was that something you're trying to do to motivate your team?
No, that's just, you know, straight from my heart and all that kind of stuff. Anybody that's ever been around me knows that that's the way I am. You can ask, you know, people in Baltimore and, you know, the team. It's just that it's never got out, you know, before. But, you know, I'm like that. I'm an emotional guy. I'm a passionate person. But, you know, my main message is I came here to be a champion. And, you know, I believe in myself, and I believe in this football team. And I just wanted to make sure that they knew that, you know, that's who I am. And it's funny, I was telling our guys, our reporters today, that, you know, there's very few quotes that I remember, which I know surprises nobody. But, as, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson had a great quote, and he said, to be a champ, you have to believe in yourself when nobody else will. Well, I think that fits us, and nobody else does right now, but we believe in each other, and we know we're going against a true champion team, a team that's won through, you know, several Super Bowls, three Super Bowls, and again, we know we're walking in, they say, you know, we're walking into a hornet's nest and all that, but you know, we beat this team week two. You know, I thought we had the better team, you know, in week two. Obviously, over the last month and a half, they played much better than we have. But we're going to find out who's got the better team on Sunday. And, again, we're coming here to win.
What stood out most for you about Tom Brady over the last few weeks, about how his game, how his season has evolved?
Well, I mean, I thought he's the best quarterback in the league when we faced him, and I still believe that. So, you know, I don't know how much, you know, things have changed. Obviously, you know, Wes Welker is back healthy and playing and catching 10 balls a game. So I'm sure, you know, that helps him. But I thought the kid that filled in for him did a great job. But, you know, obviously there's very few Wes Welkers in this league, and he's a tremendous player. And obviously, you know, he's got, you know, Tom Brady has, a great deal of confidence in him.
Rex, how would you characterize what's happened to your team, you know, since last we met?
Well, that's hard to characterize because we've found ways to lose, you know, and it's been one week, it's been a defensive, you know, breakdown at the end of the game. One week it was, you know, we gave up three returns for touchdowns. One week we threw six interceptions. And the thing that's amazing to me is we still had opportunities in every one of those games to win games, you know, to win those games. And we've been beat basically in the last play of the game in four games. So, you know, if people think we're going to be pushovers, they got another thing coming.
Rex, I know that I've seen, or at least it's been written, that, you know, you might consult with Bill Parcells, and one of his favorite sayings is kind of, you are what you are.
Right.
Why is that different for you guys?
Well, I don't know what you're saying. It is that is the same for us. You know, we're 4-5 and all that stuff, but maybe what might be different is that we believe in each other. And, you know, and I think that gives us some resolve and things. We're a competent football team. We have earned the 4-5 record, like we've talked about, things like that. But we're not going to tiptoe into any place to play.
Rex, 7, 8, 9 weeks into the season, is the job pretty much what you thought it would be? Have you been surprised by anything? Have you been thrown by anything?
No, not really. I think, you know, obviously the media obligations here in New York are, you know, much more than what I witnessed in Baltimore and in Arizona and places. But, again, this has been, it's been everything that I dreamed it would be. The unfortunate thing is I didn't think that we'd lose, you know, 5 out of 6 games or something. But, you know, that is what it is. You know, I know one thing. I expect to win. Our team expects to win. And, you know, the fact that it hadn't gone our way is not going to change our resolve.
What is your defense like without Chris Jenkins clogging up the middle? How has it changed or been impacted?
It's a little smaller. kidding. But you guys got to lighten up, too. See, I think this
week... No, that's a great one. That's great.
But, you know what? It's we have good enough players. You know, inside, I think Bo is doing a good job. Sione's doing a great job in there. And then, you know, Howard Green's doing a good job as well. So, you know, we've got some tough guys. And you know, obviously, you can't replace Chris. You know, the type of player he is, there's very few Chris Jenkins out there. I mean, he's probably the best tackle in football. But, you know, we have guys that can play, so we have no excuses.
Hey, Rex, one thing that stands out from the first game, especially how well Moss has played since then, is how you guys kind of shut him down. How much would you say that Darrell had him one-on-one, and how much were you guys kind of rolling coverages away, too?
Well, I think, you know, Randy Moss is the best vertical receiver in football, and he was going into our game as well. I think we are the best corner in football, and they know how we're going to line him up. They know how we're going to play him, and, you know, Darrell Revis gives us an opportunity on defense to do what other defenses can't do, and that's to really get after it. And, you know, he's a special player. He doesn't back down from any challenge. And obviously, Randy Boss is a huge challenge.
I noticed James Ahedebo was a game captain last week. Was there any particular reason for that, and how has he progressed in your eyes this season?
Well, he's a tough nut now. I mean, he's really a tough kid, and I love what he does on special teams. He's, you know, and he's helping on, you know, defense as well. He fills in on defense, and you know, I just felt, you know, I really like his intensity.
Coach, it seems like everyone and their grandmother has offered an opinion on this, so we might as well ask you, what would you have done on 4th and 2 from the 28 against the Colts and Peyton Manning?
Everybody knows what I would have done, but I'll say I would have done exactly what Coach Belichick did. But I'm just kidding. Obviously, he knows his football team way better than anybody else, and you can't question, you know, his decision. If I would have made that decision and wouldn't have worked, I'd be hanging from the Empire State Building. But, you know, but quite honestly, he's earned that. He is the best coach in football. And the fact that, I mean, it looked close to me, you know, it was just, he's got such confidence in his offense. It wasn't a lack of confidence in his defense. I just think that he has such confidence, you know, in that offense, in Tom Brady, and in Falk, and really it was, you know, I believe they beat, you guys know more about me, but I thought they did that against Atlanta, and they picked up the first down. So it's not the first time I think that he's ever done that, and, you know, how can you question a guy that's you know, won 3 Super Bowls and has the record he's had and the success that he's had? I'm definitely the wrong, you know, I'm never going to question that.
Rex, does that make preparing for a team like the Patriots, who will do anything at any given time, more difficult to prepare for?
I mean, you got to play. You got to line up and play defense. If they're going for it, you got to line up and play. You know, I think on defense we gave up on 4th down. We've given up 1 first down over the year, which was last week. So, you know, if he wants to go for it on 4th down, so be it. I can tell you this. I remember he sneaked it on us in Baltimore on a 4th down, but I wanted to prove that we could stop him again. That's why I called that timeout.
How much different will it be, in your estimation, for Brady having Wes Welker this time around?
I hope Yeah, I hope it's not any different. But obviously, he is a tremendous player, and he's a matchup. He is a tough matchup problem for anybody. You know, he's a tough dude, I think you can cover him outside, but he's one of those guys that is really, I don't want to say impossible, but the task is large when he's in the slot to try to cover him.
Rex, with some of the struggles that Mark Sanchez has had recently, do you think that just goes along with being a rookie, or do you think that there's something else to it than that?
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
The struggles that Mark Sanchez has had over some of the last few weeks, does that go along with being a rookie, or is it something more to it than that?
Well, no, I think he's had his moments. He's had some great moments, but obviously he's had some other times when, I guess you can say he played like a rookie, or he played like other quarterbacks. I mean, Jay Cutler threw the 5 picks the other night. You know, things like that are going to happen. But, this guy's a great competitor. I think he can make all the throws. A very confident guy. He's a leader. And, I just think he's going to get better,
Rex, I know, before the first meeting, obviously there was a lot of talk going back and forth. Most of it was from you guys. There hasn't been much out of there this week. Are you guys taking a slightly different approach?
I don't know about, I think my thing about not kissing, Belichick's rings was a compliment, but it was taken differently. But it's the truth. You can't beat somebody unless you believe that you can. And, we believe we can. We did beat them already. And, we're coming there with that mission. It doesn't matter to me what the betting public says or anybody else says. We're coming to New England to win the game, and we expect to win.
Rex, do you think your team has as much swagger now, and will they need that this Sunday as they did early in the season?
It depends on what the definition of swagger is. I'll say this: we believe in each other, and I know we believe in ourselves, we believe in each other, and if that's swagger or whatever, we expect to win. That's all I'm going to say, because we expect to win every game. It hadn't gone our way, in 5 of these last 6 weeks, but again, we're daring to be great.
Rex, from the division standpoint, I mean, you guys, obviously every game in the NFL is a must-win, but, I mean, is this one even heightened when you look at it? Like, you already have 3 division losses, and, a fourth one would put you guys in a really tough spot.
Oh, it put us in a near impossible spot to win our division, obviously. But if we beat New England head-to-head, the way I look at it, we're only 1 game out of the standings, and you got 6 games to play, and we'd have a tiebreaker on them. So that would put us in a great position.
How is your offense been affected without Leon Washington? Just going over to the other side of the ball, you guys lost another key player.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough one. Really hard to replace Leon. Obviously, you try to, and you got about 5 or 6 guys trying to replace him. Do all the things he does. It's really hurt our return game. It's also hurt the fact. I mean, he's one of the most dangerous backs in the league when he's running with it as a receiver. He's a tough blocker. So, when you look at the old, games between the Jets and the Patriots, obviously he was probably the number one weapon that we had. So he's been a huge loss for us.
All set, guys?
I think that's it.
Coach Ryan, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Rex.
It's always fun. Take care.
There you go. Rex Ryan, head coach of the New York Jets, made it 13 and a half minutes without shedding a tear. Without a crack in his voice. He actually poked fun at himself for doing so. You got to give him props for that. I mean, at least he was able to make light of his own situation. A couple of interesting things I thought he said, too. After saying, after all the bravado in the offseason about how he wasn't going to kiss Bill Belichick's rings and everything, called him the best coach in football when talking about that 4th-and-2 call, giving the respect that I think he probably should have given him in the offseason instead of, taking the direction he did and wanted to talk trash before he'd even coached as a head coach in the NFL.
I love you, Johnny Cakes.
I don't know what that means, but there you go. Rex Ryan not giving up on the season, even though his team's spiraling a little bit out of control at this point. But they come to Foxborough this Sunday for an emotional, emotional game. No doubt is going to be an emotional game. Whether or not he cries will remains to be seen. But we'll be here to witness it if he does.
Do you think you could ask him a question in his post-game press conference that would make him cry?
Well,
this is my challenge from behind the glass to you.
Well, we don't talk to the opposing teams after the game, though. So.
Well, you have enough guys. Send one of you guys to his press conference and just go, so I heard your mother's fat. She smells bad.
Oh, boy. If that's the case, it runs in the family.
Oh.
Oh. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482, the phone number. Got a couple of emails here we're going to get to. Look who's in the studio.
Where?
Brian Lowe. This is Brian Lowe from the Fantasy Lowdown, is it not?
I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
Well, yeah, you know, I know that, but
this is my third show pop-in in the last 24 hours.
You're almost as good as Scalavino when you did a full day.
The day I did the full day.
I just thought of it. Yeah, I do. Yeah, just popping in and out, just come and go as I please.
Yeah, cameos. Just stealing lunch from people on other shows. And,
stealing lunch from people.
Well.
Once a year as opposed to three or four times a week. Three?
Two.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
Yeah, because I'm not here Tuesday.
Okay, but in general, but you, if you were, it would be three.
No, it would only be two because on Wednesdays we have pizza from PR.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
Also known as still a free lunch.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Fair enough.
But, you know.
It's a good point. I guess that is two lunches for me this week, but I much appreciated today's.
Paul
from
in London?
Oh.
Right, yeah.
What'd
you have?
Meatball calzone.
From Pizzeria Grande?
From Pizzeria Grande.
What was the verdict?
Well, I knew it would be great because they give you a quality... They give you a quality calzone, and it is massive.
Or as Mikey Vandalism would say, a premium calzone.
Oh, it hurts my ears when he does that.
Sounded like Lawrence Maroney.
Did you eat the whole thing, the whole calzone?
No. Now, I know we discussed this earlier with others.
Others being Andy and Paul.
Andy and Paul. Now, I could sit down and eat the whole thing. I think I could. I wouldn't feel good about myself at the end of it from a physical and from a mental standpoint. I try to, you know, I try to watch some of what I eat.
Mm-hmm.
I think I ate about 2/3 of it. And I said, you know what? This will make for a good part of dinner,
mm-hmm.
lunch tomorrow,
sure.
Dinner tomorrow,
yep.
Saturday. I don't know.
Yep.
But it got the job done. It was superb.
I didn't get the calzone this time, but whenever I do, I tend to eat the whole thing on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's
real men can eat it in one sitting.
Listen, wow. I know, I'm only going to sound like a buffoon if I keep saying I could do it. Listen,
wow.
I could do it. Chose not to.
Okay,
He's got a late night of being on TV and stuff like that, so he might need food later on.
I do.
You do. You're on TV.
You know
tonight?
Something I don't know.
Patriots Today? Don't you have a show to put out?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
If I'm in here right now, it better be... My portion of it better be done. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in here right now. But, yeah, that airs... That should be up within the next hour. Patriots.com.
To the inbox we go.
We do.
Email. Kevin in Illinois says, my question is, why is everyone so sure that we're going to spank the Jets? This is a pivotal game for us. If we lose this game and Miami wins tonight versus Carolina on Thursday Night Football... We have a race and still have to play Miami in Miami. I know they're without Ronnie Brown for the season, but Pat White is waiting. I think all fans and writers need to be cautious of overlooking the Jets. Seems that we're looking back at Indy and even ahead to New Orleans. Let's get back to 1 week at a time and get this one in the bag. Thanks. That's Kevin in Illinois. I'm not really looking past the Jets, and I don't think it's going to be a blowout necessarily, Bilo. I do think the Patriots are going to win... convincingly, and by that I don't mean a blowout. I mean could be a low-scoring game, but I think they will dominate the game, much like they dominated Indy for three quarters and three quarters.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance they lose this game. I'm not prepared to say that it's going to be a blowout, as you said. I just think, you know, this Patriots team. I think we'll find out what this Patriots team is really all about as long, you know, if they go out there and slaughter the Jets, or like you say, beat them convincingly, or just. Certainly, they have to win. We'll know that this team does have some mental fortitude and they're tough enough to bounce back from really a humiliating is the wrong word. Really a stunning,
devastating
loss because in many ways. I mean, that was they were a couple of plays, a couple of minutes away from really putting themselves in position to lock up the number two spot in the AFC, mm-hmm. maybe have a chance at number one, mm-hmm. Knock off an undefeated team on the in their house,
right.
and really make a statement. They didn't do that, and it was a stunner. What I've been thinking about this week is we really don't know what this team is really made of. And there's a lot of guys, especially on the defensive side, we don't know what this team is made of leadership-wise, rallying the team back together. I mean, all the nonsense about does Belichick trust the defense, confidence in the defense, yep. whether that's valid or not, I think the defense should take it upon themselves this week to say, hey, look, whether he had confidence in us or not, we failed at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So whatever he thought of us, we need to show him, not us against him, but we need to prove to him what we're made of. And prove to themselves. So I think we're going to find out what this team is made of. I think this is the pivotal week to find out what this team is made of. Now, I think the Jets are a bit of a dangerous team. I see no way the Patriots are going to lose this game. But playing the Jets right now, the Jets are desperate. The Jets lose this game, they can end it. It's over. Mm-hmm. Jets win this game?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, Rex Ryan said it in his conference call.
If the Jets win this game,
they're
in business. Because you know what? The Patriots would be having lost two games, 0-2 to the Jets, 2-2 in the division, mm-hmm. facing two very difficult road games coming up.
Yeah.
You shudder to think what this could mean for mm-hmm. the Patriots. This is
it's a must-win.
It's a must-win for both teams. But you know what? The Patriots, I think, in one of the most stunning NFL statistics, having only lost back-to-back games once in 7 years, mm-hmm. is stunning to me. It's an amazing statistic. Yeah. It really is.
Yep.
And there's something behind that with what Belichick and the coaching staff does to prepare the team,
yep.
what Brady does responding to it, and what a lot of these guys who have been around do when they bounce back from a loss. It's a stunning stat, and I think that whatever that intangible is, they'll keep that up.
I agree, and I don't think anyone's looking past the Jets. I mean, at least I'm speaking for myself and for those of us who work here. I don't think any of us is looking past the Jets. And like you said, it's going to be a tough game. It's always a tough game with the Jets. No matter what the records are going in, it's a tough game. It's a division game. It's always tough. Rarely do we get those. I think it was week two in the 0-2 season. Coming off the first Super Bowl, they played mm-hmm. the Jets in the Meadowlands, and it was like 44-7 or something
Patriots
ridiculous.
Came out smoking that year.
Yeah. You rarely get those in this rivalry.
The Jets have had their success against Patriots, and the Jets have had their success against Patriots here in Foxborough. They won in 06. I mean, who saw that coming? Oh, Eric Mangy?
They
won here last year in overtime.
Right.
The playoff game in 06, obviously that was that wasn't much of a contest.
Right.
And, 07, we all know what happened the 07 season, it was an odd season.
Yeah.
But the Jets have had success here in Foxborough, and I you can't look past that. It's mm-hmm. it's two desperate teams, but the Patriots, they know what's at stake here. They know what a win would mean. They know what a loss would mean. Mm-hmm. They don't want to feel the loss.
One other piece of housekeeping from that Indy game before we move on, and we have an
officially
image.
Once you finish this, the whole
everything
organization wide we can move on
exactly.
Everyone's been waiting for
this
Eric Scalabrino.
We get this thing out of the way.
Thursday.
Right.
What do you got?
In that game, but prior to the game, thank you, doctor. You just handed me the official injury report for the day.
Let's get your thought out there.
But this has to do with injuries. Before the game, they placed rookie receiver Brandon Tate, mm-hmm. who had just come off the non-football injury list, played in a couple of games, placed him on IR, so his season is done. His rookie season is done. Knee injury is what we heard. Mm-hmm. He was on the NFI list because of a knee injury that he suffered in college. And Larry, doesn't say where, writes in and says about Tate, is the knee he hurt the same knee that he had the operation on, the one that he hurt in college? I don't know. I haven't heard anything about the injury. I haven't heard anything about his situation.
Mm-hmm. Same.
You have to hope that it's not the same knee.
Right.
Only because that just makes it less likely that he's going to have the type of career that we expected him to have.
Right.
But then again, now he's coming back from two bad knees instead of one. If it is
either
the
way,
knee,
it's not good.
Either way, it's really not that good for him. But I guess the lesser of the two evils would be to have two knees that have mm-hmm. been worked on, not the same knee. Because if it's the same knee, that's structurally that's hard to recover from the same type of injury. We just don't know.
Yeah, and we'll probably find out one of two ways. someone, a reporter talks to his agent in coming weeks or months, or we find out in March when they reconvene for spring camps, and that's our first opportunity to see if he's out there, and if he is, talk to him.
Right.
That's how you find out. There won't be much information from the team. I mean, you know, sometimes a guy who's on IR is seen in the locker room, and members of the media have a chance to talk to him. I don't know if that'll be the case. But, yeah, it is too bad because he had shown flashes in his just two or three games. And I just thought, you know, the first game, the game against Tampa, the fact that Brady threw deep to him so quickly, to me, the play failed. But to me, that was a sign that they think enough of this guy that right off the bat they can go deep, and have confidence that he can that he can come through. Now he didn't. It was a bad throw. Whatever it was, the play failed. But that to me showed a lot about what they think of the
guy. And his first play as a pro, they handed the ball to him.
Yeah.
On an end around.
Yeah.
He returned two kickoffs in that game for 22 yards each, I believe.
I think he's a guy that in the two or three games that he was active, I think the goal was, let's get the ball in this guy's hands. Return game, whatever. Let's see what he can do with the ball in his hands. And fit, you know, don't know what his role is. We're short in depth overall receiver. Let's see what he can do with the ball in his hands. And I think he showed some good flashes. It is too bad. You know, I was surprised. I honestly don't know that I would have expected to see him at all this year if it weren't for their stunning lack of depth.
I agree. I was really surprised even that he came off as quickly as he did, because when you NFI is a lot like PUP, where after 6 weeks, the team then has a three-week window where they have to decide what to do with you. They could immediately make a transaction with you, or they can wait the 3 full weeks or at any time in between. They decided right away, as soon as they could, they activated him. Same with Mark LeVar, who was on the PUP.
They
needed both guys, and LeVar has continued to contribute since he's come back, mostly as the tight end, lining up as eligible to help out in blocking.
He and Dan Connolly make officials very busy on the field.
Oh yeah, a lot of
64 is eligible.
64, 63. A lot of cleaning the the jersey off there.
It gets comical. You hear 5-6 plays in a row.
Right.
It's like, guy, listen, we know you see 64 out there. Why don't you, the ref should just say, if you see 64. He can catch a pass.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. Was just overpowered.
Have we had Hockley this year? I don't think we have.
I don't think we've had Hockley this year.
Gotta be due. Boy, this would be a fun week to have Hockley.
Oh.
Or wait till it gets much colder and see if he still goes short sleeves so he can show off the guns.
Yeah, the gun show.
The gun show.
Doesn't he have a kids large jersey for long weather games?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Injury reports out here, Bilo. You were at practice.
I sure was.
With me earlier today.
Was. Yeah.
Let's see. Tully, Jarvis, Steve Neal, Rob Ninkovich, Fred Taylor. None of those guys participated for the second straight day.
Correct.
No surprise on any of those.
Correct.
Sam Aiken was back at practice today after missing yesterday. Limited was his
designation
for the day. Same with Eric Alexander, 2 days in a row. Chris Baker has a shoulder that's been nagging him, but he's been out there. He caught a pass against the Colts the other day. Limited participation for him. Ron Brace, limited with an ankle. Edelman with the forearm still, limited. Copen, the knee, limited. Matt Light, limited. Sammy Morris, limited. Ty Warren. Now, the funny thing with Ty Warren, the last couple of weeks, he'd been out there. We saw him with our own eyes, and he was listed as not having participated.
Right.
Yesterday, he was not out there that we could see, and he was listed as not having participated. Today, he was back out there with limited participation.
So the
saga continues.
The saga does continue. Now, the thing I would say about this, last week was kind of an odd week, injury report practice-wise, because you had all these guys having not practiced Thursday.
It's Indy week. Right.
Indy week. And generally, I tend to think that by now, after Thursday's practice, if a guy hasn't practiced yet,
he's done.
I tend to think he's done.
For the week, at least.
Wasn't really the case last week, at least in terms of Dan Copen,
who didn't practice Wednesday and Thursday. Practiced Friday
and played. And Julian Edelman, too, correct?
Yes.
He did not practice Wednesday and Thursday.
Correct. He was out there Friday.
Correct.
And
he
caught the touchdown.
He caught a touchdown.
In the first half.
Yeah, he actually, he was only out there, he wasn't out there a ton, but He made the most of his time out there. So, you know, it's just one of those things. My general thinking is, come Thursday, if a guy's in practice, he's probably not playing. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, I wouldn't be stunned if Rob Ninkovich shows up tomorrow at practice and plays, or if Sam Aiken was out there. I would say the guys that we could probably rule out are Fred Taylor.
Probably.
I feel like Stephen Neal, concussion. It would, or no, head. I'm sorry, it wasn't
head.
Head.
But...
I don't know. Don't know what to think there. And then Tully, I saw him in the locker room today. He walked through very briefly.
He did.
But I don't know. I don't have a good
I don't have a good read on that either. As far as the Jets go, a couple of noteworthy ones before we let you take over for the fantasy lowdown. Vernon Golston has been out with a hamstring this week. He's listed as TBA for today. They don't really have all of their they don't have their 4 o'clock update mm-hmm. just yet. But some of the guys that to mention, Vernon Golston, Jim Leonard, who earlier in the show, Bilo, we talked to Mia Harris from WFAN, who covers the Jets, said it looks unlikely that Leonard's going to play this week, which could have an impact on the passing game for the Patriots. Sean Ellis with a knee injury, limited yesterday. Brad Smith, quad, limited yesterday. And Brian Thomas, toe, full participation. So the Jets aren't too banged up numbers-wise, but certainly with Golston and Leonard and Ellis, a couple of guys who could play some significant roles who are kind of questionable at this point. So
there you go.
So you're up next with the lowdown. How's your fantasy team doing?
They're doing weak. One of them's doing well.
Yeah, you have like six of them.
Three.
Don't you?
Three. I got three. We'll talk about it all. We got Eric Casilius, another a fellow ERIK.
Oh, really? He spells it correctly.
Yeah. In fact, he was just on TV doing, I think, college football. He's on at 4:45, so at the end of the show, we'll talk. He's great. We had him on last year. Jack of all trades, but he's definitely heavily involved in their fantasy football analysis, so we'll talk to him. We got a bunch of emails, and you can email us in. Game tonight, Carolina-Miami, lots of fantasy
implications. Yeah, get your rosters in
gotta
now,
get your rosters
because then
in
you'll
now.
Be you'll be illegal. Your rosters will be illegal
possibly,
if you don't
do
that.
As long as you get your stuff for tonight's game.
Right.
So lots to come in the next hour.
Email Bilo, webradio@patriots.com. Or give them a call. You take calls, right?
We sure do.
508-543-7482. The Fantasy Lowdown is next. I'm Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, sitting in for John Rick this week on The Playbook. We'll talk to you next week after the Jets game.